She shoved violently backward, using her greater weight to slam Atropos against the side of the archway. A startled grunt escaped him. The hand holding the scalpel flew upward. The blade dug dry scales of dirt from the wall. Lois turned toward him, her face knotted in an angry snarl. A look so un-our Lois that McGovern might have fainted in shock at the sight of it. Her hands clawed at the sides of his face, reaching for his ears. One of her fingers dug into his cheek. Atropos yapped like a dog whose paw has been stepped on, then grabbed her by the waist again and whirled her back around. He turned the scalpel's blade inward, getting ready to slash. Ralph shook the forefinger of his right hand at it in a scolding gesture. A flash of light, so pallid it was almost invisible, shot out from the nail and struck the scalpel's tip, momentarily knocking it away from Lois's balloon string. And that was all there was. Ralph sensed that his personal armory was now empty. Atropos bared his teeth at him from over Lois's shoulder as she bucked and twisted in his arms. She was not trying to get away, either. She was trying to turn and attack him. Her feet flailed out as she threw all her weight against him again, trying to squash him against the wall behind them. And without having the slightest idea of what he meant to do, Ralph lunged forward and dropped to his knees with his hands out. He looked like a manic suitor making a strenuous marriage proposal, and one of Lois's thrashing feet came close to kicking him in the throat. He snatched at the hem of her slip, and it came free in a slithery little rush of pink nylon. Meanwhile, Lois was still yelling, "Miserable little thief! Here's something for you! How do you like it?" Atropos uttered a squeal of pain, and when Ralph looked up, he saw that Lois had buried her teeth in his right wrist. His left hand, the one holding the scalpel, flailed blindly at her balloon string, missing it by less than an inch. Ralph sprang to his feet, and still with no clear idea of what he was doing, pulled Lois's pink half-slip over Atropos's slashing hand and his head. "Get away from him, Lois! Run!" She spat out the small white hand and stumbled toward the barrel-head table in the center of the room, wiping Atropos's blood from her mouth with atavistic loathing. But the dominant expression on her face was still one of anger. Atropos himself, for the moment, just a bawling, writhing shape under the pink half-slip, groped after her with his free hand. Ralph slapped it away and shoved him back, against the side of the archway. "No, you don't, my friend. Not at all.
Let me go. Let me go, you bastard. You can't do this."
And the weirdest thing of all is that he really believes that, Ralph thought. He's had it his own way for so long that he's completely forgotten what short-timers can do. "I can fix that, I think." Ralph remembered how Atropos had slashed Rosalie's balloon string after the dog had licked his hand, and his hatred for this strutting, leering, complacently insane creature suddenly exploded in his head like a rotten green road flare. He grabbed one side of Lois's slip and twisted his fist twice around it in a savage winding-up gesture, pulling it so tight that Atropos's features stood out in a pink nylon death mask. Then, just as the blade of the scalpel popped through the fabric and began to cut it open, Ralph whirled Atropos around, using the slip as a man might use a sling to whirl a stone, and sent him flying across the archway. The damage might have been less if Atropos had fallen, but he didn't. His feet knocked against each other, but never quite crossed. He hit the rock facing of the archway with a thud, voiced a muffled scream of pain, and dropped to his knees. Spots of blood bloomed on Lois's half-slip like flower petals. The scalpel had disappeared back through the slit it had made in the cloth. Ralph sprang after Atropos just as it reappeared and lengthened the original cut, freeing the bald creature's staring, bewildered face. His nose was bleeding, so were his forehead and right temple. Before he could begin to get up, Ralph grabbed the slippery pink bulges that were his shoulders.
"Stop it! I'm warning you, Shorts! I'll make you sorry you were ever bo—"
Ralph ignored this pointless bluster and slammed Atropos forward hard. The midget's arms were still tangled in the slip, and he caught the floor with nothing but face. His shriek was part amazement, mostly pain. Incredibly, Ralph felt Lois in the back of his mind, telling him that enough was enough, not to really hurt him, not to hurt the pint-sized psychotic who had just tried to kill her. Atropos attempted to roll over. Ralph knee-dropped him in the middle of the back and knocked him flat again.
"Don't move, friend. I like you just the way you are."
He looked up at Lois and saw that her amazing fury had departed as suddenly as it had come, like some freak weather phenomenon. A tornado, perhaps, that touches down out of a clear blue sky, rips the top off a barn, and then disappears again. She was pointing at Atropos.
"He's got my earrings, Ralph! The nasty little thief has got my earrings! He's wearing them!"
"I know, I saw." One snarling side of Atropos's face poked out of the slit in the nylon, like the face of the world's ugliest baby at the moment of its birth. Ralph could feel the muscles of the small creature's back trembling beneath his pinioning knee. And he remembered an old proverb he'd read somewhere, maybe at the end of a Salada teabag string. "He who takes a tiger by the tail dare not let go." Now, in this unlikely den beneath the ground and feeling like a character in a fairy tale concocted by a lunatic, Ralph thought he had achieved a sort of divine understanding of that proverb. Through a combination of Lois's sudden rage and plain old shit-ass luck, he had wound up at least temporarily on top of the scuzzy little fuck. The question, and a fairly pressing one at that, was what to do next. The hand holding the scalpel lashed up, but the stroke was both weak and blind. Ralph avoided it easily. Sobbing and cursing, not afraid even now, but clearly hurting and all but consumed with impotent rage, Atropos flailed up at him again.
"Let me up, you overgrown short-term bastard! Silly old white hair, ugly wrinkled face!" "I look a little better than that just lately, my friend, haven't you noticed?" "Asshole! Stupid short-time asshole! I'll make you sorry! I'll make you so sorry!"
Well, Ralph thought, at least he's not begging. I almost would have expected him to start begging by now. Atropos continued to flail weakly with the scalpel. Ralph ducked two or three of these strokes easily, then slid one hand toward the throat of the creature lying beneath him.
"Ralph! No, don't!"
He shook his head at her, not knowing if he was expressing annoyance, reassurance, or both. He touched Atropos's skin and felt him shudder. The bald doc uttered a choked cry of revulsion, and Ralph knew exactly how he felt. It was sickening for both of them, but he didn't take his hand away. Instead, he tried to close it around Atropos's throat and wasn't very surprised to find he couldn't do it. Still, hadn't Lachesis said that only short-timers could oppose the will of Atropos? He thought so. The question was how. Beneath him, Atropos laughed nastily.
"Please, Ralph, please just get my earrings and we'll go."
Atropos rolled his eyes in her direction, then looked back at Ralph.
"Did you think you could kill me, Shorts? Well, guess again."
No, he hadn't thought it. But he needed to find out for sure.
"Life's a bitch, ain't it, Shorts? Why don't you just give me back the ring? I'm going to get it sooner or later, I guarantee you that."
"Fuck you, you little weasel." Tough talk, but talk was cheap. The most pressing question was still unanswered. What the hell was he supposed to do with this monster? "Whatever it is, you won't be able to do it with Lois standing there and watching you," a cold voice that was not quite Carolyn's advised him. She was fine when she was pissed off, but she's not pissed off now. She's too tender-hearted for whatever's going to happen next, Ralph. You have to get her out of here. He turned toward Lois. Her eyes were half closed. She looked ready to crumple at the base of the archway and go to sleep. "Lois, I want you to get out of here, right now. Go up the stairs and wait for me under the The scalpel flashed up again, and this time it almost sliced off the end of Ralph's nose. He recoiled, and his knees slid on nylon. Atropos gave a mighty heave and came within a whisker of rolling out from under. At the last second, Ralph shoved the little man's head flat again with the heel of his hand. That, it seemed, was allowed by the rules, and replanted his knee.
"Oh, ow, stop it, you're killing me!"
Ralph ignored him and looked at Lois. "Go on, Lois. Go on up. I'll be there as soon as I can." "I don't think I can climb out on my own. I'm too tired." "Yes, you can. You have to. And you can." Atropos subsided again, for the moment at least, a small gasping engine under Ralph's knee. but that was a long way from being enough. Time was passing topside, passing fast. And right now, time was the real enemy, not Ed Deepnow.
My earrings! I'll bring them when I come, Lois, I promise.
Making what looked like a supreme effort, Lois straightened and looked solemnly at Ralph.
You shouldn't hurt him, Ralph. Not if you don't have to. It's not Christian.
No, not at all Christian, a capering little creature deep inside Ralph's head agreed. Not Christian, but still, I can't wait to get started.
Go on, Lois. Leave him to me.
She looked at him sadly.
It wouldn't do me any good to ask you to promise not to hurt him, would it?
He thought about it, then shook his head.
No, but I'll promise you this much. It won't be any harder than he makes it. Is that good enough?
Lois considered carefully, then nodded.
Yes, I think that will do. And maybe I can make it back up if I take it slow and easy. But what about you?
I'll be fine. Wait for me under the tree.
All right, Ralph.
He watched across the filthy room, Helen's sneaker bobbing from one wrist. She ducked beneath the arch between the apartment and the stairway and slowly started up. Ralph waited until her feet had disappeared from view, then turned back to Atropos.
Well, Chumley, here we are, two old pals reunited. What should we do? Should we play? You like to play, don't you?
Atropos immediately renewed his struggles, simultaneously waving his scalpel above his head and trying to buck Ralph off.
Quit it! Get your hands off me, you old faggot!
Atropos thrashed so wildly that kneeling on him now was like kneeling on a snake. Ralph ignored the yelling, the bucking, and the blindly waving scalpel. Atropos's whole head was now sticking out of the slip, which made things a lot easier. He grabbed Lois's earrings and tugged. They stayed where they were, but earned him a hearty, pained scream from Atropos. Ralph leaned forward, smiling a little.
For pierced ears, aren't they, pal?
Yes, yes, goddammit!
To quote you, life's a bitch, ain't it?
Ralph seized the earrings again and ripped them free. There were two small fans of blood as the minute holes in the lobes of Atropos's ears became flaps. The bald man's scream was as sharp as a new drill bit. Ralph felt an uneasy mixture of pity and contempt. Little bastard used to hurting other people, but not being hurt himself. Maybe he's never been hurt himself.
Well, say hello to how the other half lives, pal.
Stop it! Stop it! You can't do this to me!
I've got a newsflash for you, buddy. I am doing it. Now why don't you just get with the program?
What do you think you're going to accomplish by this, Shorts? It'll happen anyway, you know. All those people at the Civic Center are going to go bye-bye, and taking the ring won't stop it.
Don't I know it, Ralph thought. Atropos was still panting, but he had stopped thrashing. Ralph felt able to look away from him for a moment and send his eyes on a quick tour of the room. He supposed what he was really looking for was inspiration. Even a small bolt would do.
Can I make a suggestion, Mr. A? As your new little pal and playmate, I know you're busy, but you ought to find time to do something about this place. I'm not talking about getting it in-house beautiful or anything like that, but sheesh, what a sty!
Atropos simultaneously sulky and wary.
Do you think I give a fuck what you think, Shorts?
He could only think of one way to proceed. He didn't like it, but he was going to go ahead just the same. He had to go ahead. There was a picture in his mind that guaranteed it. It was a picture of Ed Deepnow flying toward Derry from the coast in a light plane, one with either a crate of high explosive or a tank of nerve gas stowed in the nose. What can I do with you, Mr. A? Any ideas? The response was immediate and unequivocal.
Let me go. That's the answer, the only answer. I'll leave you alone, both of you. Leave you for the purpose. You'll live another 10 years. Hell, maybe another 20. It's not impossible. All you and the little lady have to do is butt out. Go home. And when the Big Bang comes, watch it on the TV news.
Ralph tried to sound as if he were honestly considering this. And you'd leave us alone? You'd promise to leave us alone?
Yes.
Atropos's face had taken on a hopeful look, and Ralph could see the first traces of an aura springing up around the little creep. It was the same low and nasty red as the pulsing glow which lit the apartment. "Do you know something, Mr. A?" Atropos, looking more hopeful than ever.
"No, what?"
Ralph shot one hand forward, grabbed Atropos's left wrist, and twisted it hard. Atropos shrieked in agony. His fingers loosened on the handle of the scalpel, and Ralph plucked it free with the ease of a veteran pickpocket lifting a wallet. "I believe you."
"Give it back! Give it back! Give it back! Give it—"
In his hysteria, Atropos might have gone on shrieking this for hours, so Ralph put a stop to it in the most direct way he knew. He leaned forward and slashed a shallow vertical cut down the back of the big bald head poking out of the hole in Lois's half-slip. No invisible hand tried to repel him, and his own hand moved with no trouble at all. Blood, a shocking amount of it, welled out of the line cut. The aura around Atropos had now gone to the dark and baleful red of an infected wound. He shrieked again. Ralph rocked forward and spoke chummily into his ear. "Maybe I can't kill you, but I can certainly fuck you up, can't I? And I don't need to be loaded with psychic juice to do it either. This little honey will do just fine." He used the scalpel to cross the first cut he'd made, making a lowercase T on the back of Atropos's head. Atropos shrieked and began to flail wildly. Ralph was disgusted to discover that part of him, the capering gremlin, was enjoying this enormously. "If you want me to go on cutting you, go on struggling. If you want me to stop, then you stop." Atropos became still at once. "Okay, now I'm going to ask you a few questions. I think you'll find it in your best interest to answer them."
"Ask me anything, whatever you want. Just don't cut me anymore."
"That's a pretty good attitude, Pally. But I think there's always room for improvement, don't you? Let's see." Ralph sliced down again, this time opening a long gash in the side of Atropos's skull. A flap of skin peeled loose like badly glued wallpaper. Atropos howled. Ralph felt a cramp of revulsion in the pit of his stomach and was actually relieved. But when he spoke, thought at Atropos, he took great pains not to let that feeling show. "Okay, that's my motivational lecture, Doc. If I have to repeat it, you'll need crazy glue to keep the top of your head from flying off in a high wind. Do you understand me?"
"Yes, yes."
"And do you believe me?"
"Yes, rotten old white hair, yes."
"Okay, that's good. Here's my question, Mr. A. If you make a promise, are you bound by it?" Atropos was slow in answering, an encouraging sign. Ralph laid the flat of the scalpel's blade against his cheek to hurry him up. He was rewarded with another scream and instant cooperation.
"Yes, yes! Just don't cut me again! Please don't cut me again!"
Ralph took the scalpel away. The outline of the blade burned on the little creature's unlined cheek like a birthmark. "Okay, sunshine, listen up. I want you to promise you'll leave me and Lois alone until the rally at the Civic Center is over. No more chasing, no more slashing, no more bullshit. Promise me that."
"Fuck you! Take your promise and shove it up your ass!"
Ralph was not put out of temper by this. His smile, in fact, widened, because Atropos hadn't said, "I won't." And, even more important, Atropos hadn't said, "I can't." He had just said no. Just a little backsliding, in other words, and easily remedied. Steeling himself, Ralph ran the scalpel straight down the middle of Atropos's back. The slip split, the dirty white tunic beneath it split, and so did the flesh beneath the tunic. Blood poured out in a sickening flood, and Atropos's tortured, wailing shriek beat at Ralph's ears. He leaned over and murmured into the small ear again, grimacing and avoiding the blood as best he could. "I don't like doing this anymore, Chumley. In fact, about two more cuts and I'm going to throw up again. But I want you to know that I can do it, and I'm going to keep on doing it until you either give me the promise I want or until the force that stopped me from choking you stops me again. I think if you wait for that to happen, you're going to be one hurting unit. So what do you say? Do you want a promise, or do you want me to peel you like a grape?" Atropos was blubbering. It was a nauseating, horrible sound.
You don't understand. If you succeed in stopping what's been started, the chances are slim, but it's possible that you might. I will be punished by the creature you call the Crimson King.
Ralph clamped his teeth together and slashed down again. His lips pressed so tightly together that his mouth looked like a long-healed scar. There was a faint tug as the scalpel's blade slid through gristle, and then Atropos's left ear tumbled to the floor. Blood poured out of the hole on the side of his bald head, and his scream this time was loud enough to hurt Ralph's ears. They're sure a long way from being gods, aren't they? Ralph thought. He felt sick with horror and dismay. The only real difference between them and us is that they live longer, and they're a little harder to see. And I guess I'm not much of a soldier. Just looking at all that blood makes me feel like passing out. Shit.
All right, I promise. Just stop cutting me. No more, please. No more.
That's a start, but you're going to have to be more specific. I want to hear you say that you promise to stay away from me and Lois, and Ed too, until the rally at the Civic Center is over. He expected more wiggling and weaseling, but Atropos surprised him.
I promise. I promise to stay away from you and from the bitch you're running around with.
Lois. Say her name. Lois.
Yeah, her. Lois Chass. I agree to stay away from her, and Deep Know too. From all of you. Just as long as you don't cut me anymore. Are you satisfied? Is it good enough, goddamn you?
Ralph decided he was satisfied, or as satisfied as any man can be when he is deeply sickened by his own methods and actions. He didn't believe there were any trapdoors hidden in Atropos's promise. The little bald man knew he might pay a high price later for giving in now, but in the end that hadn't been able to offset the pain and terror Ralph had inflicted on him. Yes, Mr. A., I think it's good enough. Ralph slid off his small victim with his stomach rolling and a sensation. It had to be false, didn't it? That his throat was opening and closing like the valve of a clam. He looked at the blood-splattered scalpel for a moment, then cocked his arm back and threw it as hard as he could. It flew end for end through the arch and disappeared into the storeroom beyond. Good riddance, Ralph thought. At least I didn't get much on myself. There's that. He no longer felt like vomiting. Now he felt like crying. Atropos got slowly to his knees and looked around with the dazed eyes of a man who has survived a killer storm. He saw his ear lying on the floor and picked it up. He turned it over in his small hands and looked at the strands of gristle trailing out from the backside. Then he looked up at Ralph. His eyes swam with tears of pain and humiliation, but there was something else in them as well, a rage so deep and deadly that Ralph recoiled from it. All his precautions seemed flimsy and foolish in the face of that rage. He took a blundering step backward and pointed at Atropos with an unsteady finger. Remember your promise. Atropos bared his teeth in a gruesome grin. The dangling flap of skin on the side of his face swung back and forth like a slack sail, and the raw flesh beneath it oozed and trickled.
Of course I'll remember it. How could I forget? In fact, I'd like to make you another. Two for the price of one, you might say.
Atropos made a gesture Ralph remembered well from the hospital roof, spreading the first two fingers of his right hand in a V and then flicking them upward, creating a red arc in the air. Within it, Ralph saw a human figure. Beyond it, dimly glimpsed, as if seen through a mist of blood, was the Red Apple Store. He started to ask who that was standing in the foreground on the curb of Harris Avenue, and then suddenly he knew. He looked up at Atropos with shocked eyes.
Jesus, no! No, you can't!
The grin on Atropos's face continued to widen.
You know, that's what I kept thinking about you, short time. Only I was wrong. You are, too. What?
Atropos moved his spread fingers slightly wider. Ralph saw someone wearing a Boston Red Sox baseball cap come out of the Red Apple. And this time Ralph knew immediately whom he was looking at. This person called to the one across the street, and then something terrible began to happen. Ralph turned away, sickened from the bloody arc of the future between Atropos's small fingers. But he heard it when it happened.
"The one I showed you first belongs to the random, Shorts. To me, in other words. And here's my promise to you. If you go on getting in my way, what I've just shown you is going to happen. There's nothing you can do, no warning you can give, that will stop it from happening. But if you leave off now, if you and the woman simply stand aside and let events take their course, then I will stay my hand."
The vulgarities which formed so large a part of Atropos's usual discourse had been left behind like a discarded costume, and for the first time Ralph had some clear sense of how truly old and malevolently wise this being was.
"Remember what the junkies say, Shorts? Dying is easy, living is hard. It's a true saying. If anyone should know, it's me. So what do you think? Having any second thoughts?"
Ralph stood in the filthy chamber with his head down and his fists clenched. Lois's earrings burned in one of them like small hot coals. Ed's ring also seemed to burn against him, and he knew there wasn't a thing in the world to stop him from taking it out of his pocket and throwing it into the other room after the scalpel. He remembered a story he'd read in school about 1,000 years ago. The Lady or the Tiger, it had been called, and now he understood what it was to be given such a terrible power and such a terrible choice. On the surface, it seemed easy enough. What, after all, was one life against 2,000? But that one life... Yet really, it isn't as if anyone would ever have to know, he thought coldly. No one except maybe for Lois. And Lois would accept my decision. Carolyn might not have done, but they're very different women. Yes, but did he have the right? Atropos also read this in his aura. It was spooky how much the creature saw.
"Of course you do, Ralph. That's what these matters of life and death are really about. Who has the right? This time it's you. So what do you say?"
"I don't know what I say. I don't know what I think. All I know is that I wish all three of you had left me the fuck alone."
Ralph Roberts raised his head toward the root-riddled ceiling of Atropos's den and screamed. Five minutes later, Ralph's head poked out of the shadows beneath the old leaning oak. He saw Lois at once. She was kneeling in front of him, peering anxiously through the tangle of roots at his upturned face. He raised a grimy, blood-streaked hand, and she took it firmly, holding him steady as he made his way up the last few steps. Gnarled roots that were actually more like ladder rungs. Ralph wriggled his way out from under the tree and turned over onto his back, taking the sweet air in great long pulls of breath. He thought air had never in his whole life tasted so good. In spite of everything else, he was enormously grateful to be out, to be free. "Ralph, are you all right?" He turned her hand over, kissed her palm, then put her earrings where his lips had been. "Yes, fine. These are yours." She looked at them curiously, as if she had never seen earrings, these or any others, before, and then put them in her dress pocket. "You saw them in the mirror, didn't you, Lois?" "Yes, and it made me angry. But I don't think I was really surprised, not down deep." "Because you knew." "Yes, I guess I did. Maybe from when we first saw Atropos wearing Bill's hat. I just kept it, you know, in the back of my mind." She was looking at him carefully, assessingly. "Never mind my earrings right now. What happened down there? How did you get away?" Ralph was afraid if she looked at him in that careful way for too long, she would see too much. He also had an idea that if he didn't get moving soon, he might never move again. His weariness was now so large, it was like some great encrusted object, a long-sunken ocean liner, perhaps, lying inside him, calling to him, trying to drag him down. He got to his feet. He couldn't allow either of them to be dragged down, not now. The news the sky told wasn't as bad as it could have been, but it was bad enough. It was 6 o'clock at least. All over Derry, people who didn't give a shit one way or the other about the abortion issue, the vast majority, in other words, were sitting down to hot dinners. At the Civic Center, the doors would now be open. 10K TV lights would be bathing them, and minicams would be transmitting live shots of early arriving pro-choice advocates driving past Dan Dalton and his sign-waving friends of life. Not far from here, people were chanting that old Ed Deepnow favorite, the one that went, "Hey, hey, Susan Day, how many kids did you kill today?" Whatever he and Lois did, they would have to do it in the next 60 to 90 minutes. The clock was ticking. "Come on, Lois, we have to get moving." "Are we going back to the Civic Center?" "No, not to start with. I think that to start with, we ought to..." Ralph discovered that he simply couldn't wait to hear what he had to say. Where did he think they ought to go to start with? Back to Derry home? The Red Apple? His house? Where did you go when you needed to find a couple of well-meaning, but far from all-knowing fellas who had gotten you and your few close friends into a world of hurt and trouble? Or could you reasonably expect them to find you? They might not want to find you, sweetheart. In fact, they might actually be hiding from you. "Ralph, are you sure you're..." He suddenly thought of Rosalie and knew. "The park, Lois. Strawford Park. That's where we have to go. But we need to make a stop on the way." He led her along the cyclone fence, and soon they heard the lazy sound of interwoven voices. Ralph could smell roasting hot dogs as well, and after the fetid stench of Atropos's den, the smell was ambrosial. A minute or two later, he and Lois stepped to the edge of the little picnic area near Runway 3. Dorrance was there, standing at the heart of his amazing multicolored aura and watching as a light plane drifted down toward the runway. Behind him, Faye Chapin and Don Veazey were sitting at one of the picnic tables with a chessboard between them and a half-finished bottle of Blue Nun near to hand. Stan and Georgina Eberly were drinking beer and twiddling forks with hot dogs impaled upon them in the heat shimmer. To Ralph, that shimmer was a strangely dry pink, like coral-colored sand, above the picnic area's barbecue pit. For a moment, Ralph simply stood where he was, struck dumb by their beauty, the ephemeral, powerful beauty that was, he supposed, what short-time life was mostly about. A snatch of song, something at least 25 years old, occurred to him. "We are stardust. We are golden." Dorrance's aura was different, fabulously different, but even the most prosaic of the others glittered like rare and infinitely desirable gemstones. "Oh, Ralph, do you see? Do you see how beautiful they are?" "Yes." "What a shame they don't know." But was it? In light of all that had happened, Ralph wasn't so sure. And he had an idea, a vague but strong intuition he could never have put into words, that perhaps real beauty was something unrecognized by the conscious self, a work that was always in progress, a thing of being rather than seeing. "Come on, dumbwit, make your move," a voice said. Ralph jerked, first thinking the voice was speaking to him, but it was Faye talking to Don Veazey. "You're slower than old creeping Jesus." "Never mind," Don said. "I'm thinking." "Think till hell freezes over, slick, and it's still going to be mate in 6 moves. Don poured some wine into a paper cup and rolled his eyes. "Oh, booger snot," he cried. "I didn't realize I was playing chess with Boris Spassky. I thought it was just plain old Faye Chapin. I apologize all to hell and gone." "That's a riot, Don, an act like that. You could take it on the road and make $1 million. You won't have to wait long to do it, either. You can start just 6 moves from now." "Ain't you smart," Don said. "You just don't know when to..." "Hush," Georgina Eberly said in a sharp tone. "What was that? It sounded like something blew up." "That was Lois sucking a flood of vibrant rainforest green from Georgina's aura." Ralph raised his right hand, curled it into a tube around his lips, and began to inhale a similar stream of bright blue light from Stan Eberle's aura. He felt fresh energy fill him at once. It was as if fluorescent lights were going on in his brain. But that vast sunken ship, which was really no more or less than 4 months' worth of mostly sleepless nights, was still there, and still trying to suck him down to the place where it was. The decision was still right there, too. Not yet made one way or the other, but only deferred. Stan was also looking around. No matter how much of his aura Ralph took, and he had drawn off a great deal, it seemed to him, the source remained as densely bright as ever. Apparently what they'd been told about the all but endless reservoirs of energy surrounding each human being had been the exact, literal truth. "Well," Stan said, "I did hear something."
"I didn't," Faye said. "Course not, you're deaf as dirt," Stan replied. "Stop interrupting for just 1 minute, can't you? I started to say it wasn't a fuel tank because there ain't no fire or smoke. Can't be that Don farted either, because there ain't no squirrels dropping dead out of the trees with their fur burnt off. I guess it must have been one of those big Air National Guard trucks backfiring. Don't worry, darling, I'll protect you." "Protect this," Georgina said, slapping one hand into the crook of her elbow and curling her fist at him. She was smiling, however. "Oh, boy," Faye said. "Take a peek at old Dor." They all looked at Dorrance, who was smiling and waving in the direction of the Harris Avenue extension. "Who do you see there, old fella?" Don Veazey asked with a grin. "Ralph and Lois," Dorrance said, smiling radiantly. "I see Ralph and Lois. They just came out from under the old tree." "Yep," Stan said. He shaded his eyes, then pointed directly at them. This delivered a wallop to Ralph's nervous system, which only abated when he realized Stan was just pointing where Dorrance was waving. "And look, there's Glenn Miller coming right out behind him. God damn." Georgina threw an elbow and Stan stepped away nimbly, grinning. "Hello, Ralph. Hello, Lois. Dorrance, we're going to Strawford Park, is that right?" Dorrance, grinning happily.
"I don't know. It's all long-time business now, and I'm through with it. I'm going back home soon and read Walt Whitman. It's going to be a windy night, and Whitman's always best when the wind blows."
Lois, sounding nearly frantic. "Dorrance, help us." Dor's grin faltered, and he looked at her solemnly.
"I can't. It's passed out of my hands. Whatever's done will have to be done by you and Ralph now."
"Ugh," Georgina said. "I hate it when he stares that way. You could almost believe he really does see someone." She picked up her long-handled barbecue fork and began to toast her hot dog again. "Has anybody seen Ralph and Lois, by the way?"
"No," Don said.
"They're shacked up in one of those X-rated motels down the coast with a case of beer and a bottle of Johnson's baby oil," Stan said. "The giant economy-sized bottle. I told you that yesterday."
"Filthy old man," Georgina said, this time throwing the elbow with a little more force and a lot more accuracy. "Ralph, Dorrance, can't you give us any help at all? At least tell us if we're on the right track." For a moment, he was sure Dor was going to reply. Then there was a buzzing, approaching drone from overhead, and the old man looked up. His daffy, beautiful smile resurfaced.
"Look," he cried, "an old Grumman yellow bird, and a beauty."
He jogged to the chain-link fence to watch the small yellow plane land, turning his back to them. Ralph took Lois's arm and tried to smile himself. It was hard going. He thought he had never felt quite so frightened and confused in his entire life. But he gave it the old college try. "Come on, dear. Let's go."